Welcome to LOA Today. Walt Thiessen and Life Coach David Bartke here. It's Thursday, September 28th, 2017, the last broadcast of September, David. And as usual, time just keeps marching on for us.
It really does. It's amazing. I can't even believe it's already October soon.
I know. Like, what? Why didn't somebody give me a memo? That's what I want to know.
It always seems to go so fast. Crazy.
On the other hand, there's been some good stuff happening lately. I'll start off with the email that Abraham Hicks sends out every day, which is appropriate because we're continuing our exploration of Abraham Hicks's Ask and It Is Given. So, you know, that kind of fits in pretty nicely.
Yes.
But this one talks about resistance, and that's a topic we've mentioned quite a few times. This has a really interesting take on it, and that's why I thought I'd share it. So let me read it, and we can discuss it and see what you think of it. It says, resistance is about believing that you are vulnerable or susceptible to something not wanted and holding a stance of protection, which only holds you in a place of not letting in the well-being that would be there otherwise. There is nothing big enough to protect you from unwanted things, and there are no unwanted things big enough to get into your experience. Now, that's an interesting email, don't you think?
Yeah, that last part's a little...
Yeah, it kind of throws you, that last bit.
It throws you a little bit, yeah.
There is nothing big enough to protect you from unwanted things. And I think what they're saying is if you hold yourself in that stance of protection, there is nothing... There's no amount of protection you can put up that will protect you.
Right, because you're by doing that, you're putting yourself in the vibration of that.
Which is the diametric opposite of what you're trying to accomplish.
Exactly.
I guess that's exactly. Really what makes it so complex for us is that we're not used to thinking of vulnerability and susceptibility as being a stance of protection.
Yeah.
Of being the reason for a stance of protection. We think of a stance of protection as being strength, as being, you know, I am invincible.
Yeah, and I think that last part means kind of like when you think, oh, I'm not going to let that happen, or I'm not going to let that in, but just by focusing on it, you're setting yourself up to letting it in. So it's kind of
the opposite. It reminds me of a book that was written about 50 years ago, something like that, by Richard Bach. Do you ever read Richard Bach?
I have not yet.
Check out some of his stuff. He's got some interesting stuff that is very LOA related, including one book called Illusions. And in this story of Illusions is the story of a gypsy flyer who flies biplanes in the Midwest giving rides to locals for $3 an hour, or $3 a ride, I guess it is. And he runs into another person doing the same thing in an airplane that really he shouldn't be able to land in the short pastures that he lands them in.
Oh, wow.
Comes to find out that this second person, Donald Shimoda, in the words of Richard Bach, he's a master. Or to put it another way, he's a messiah. So in other words, he is a super advanced being come to earth to preach, you know, here's how you become a messiah. And in the process of getting to know this person, Bach helps the character, the lead character, who's also named Richard, to explore, among other things, the law of attraction. One of the things that Richard, the character, tries to do in the book is he tries to emulate some of the things that Donald Shimoda can do, because Donald has these amazing powers. So he sees this great big black cloud in the sky. And he says to himself, okay, I'm going to make that black cloud disappear. And he starts hitting it with everything he can think of to hit it with, firebolts and, you know, thoughts of destructive energy and so forth. And it just keeps getting bigger and bigger and blacker. And he turns to Donald and says, well, can you get rid of it? And Donald looks up at it, looks at him and says, why do you hate me so much? Why do you give me this really, really big black cloud? And Richard says something to the effect of, well, if you can't do it, and Donald kind of shrugs and sighs and says, okay, now which one was it? And Richard looks up and it's gone. Because Donald didn't give it any power at all.
Mm-hmm.
He refused to do anything like that. And that's really what they're talking about in this Abraham Hicks quote. Their resistance is about believing you were vulnerable and susceptible and holding a stance of protection, whereas Dal Shimoda needed no protection because he didn't even believe in the black cloud in the first place.
And I like to explain resistance, too, as like any fear, worry, or doubt you have about something.
Yes.
Just draws it in because you're focusing on it and you're putting yourself in that vibration.
It reminds me of something that, another Abraham Hicks thing that I saw recently that said that there are really only two emotions, positive and negative, and that all of the labels we give are really just labels of the same thing. And so what they're really saying is, if you're holding a negative emotion or focusing on negative emotion, then you can be protecting against it all you want, but you're still going to get more stuff to feel negative emotion about.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And because it works with thoughts, too. The more you focus on what you want or what you don't want, either way, other thoughts are going to come in that match that.
And an interesting thing about thoughts is, let me see what you think about this one. This one, I was working on this for a long time, and I finally came to the conclusion that there is really no such thing as a thought without an attached emotion.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense to you?
Yes. Yes, definitely.
Which was a big leap for me, because I believed strongly in abstract thought.
Mm-hmm.
You know, power of logic and so forth, and that it was, if you were trying to be as pure as possible in your exploration of some abstraction, you wanted to be Spock-like. You wanted to be like Mr. Spock, you know, remove all emotion from the equation.
But Spock wasn't human. He was only part human. So so we can't do that as humans.
Well, as it turned out, he couldn't either. And I think that's the point. Even his father, Sarek, I don't know if you remember the character Sarek, his father.
Yeah, I do.
But even his father, who, of course, was a strict adherent to the Vulcan philosophy.
Yes, he was.
Whenever he tried to use one of his powers, there was always an emotion attached. He would always deny it, but it was always there. So apparently Vulcans can't do it either.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I have two fun law of attraction stories from yesterday.
Oh, okay.
Like to share.
Well, let's hear it.
So one is, I have been looking for my office for kind of like a velvet bench. I had this one spot. And don't ask me why, but for whatever reason, I thought, oh, a velvet bench would be perfect there. So I went into this new furniture store in the area, and I'm walking around, and I see it. There it is. It's the perfect bench for this spot, and I look at the price, and I sat down in it, and I noticed one of the back legs was just a little wobbly. So I looked at it, and if I positioned it in just the right way and then put it back down, it was fine. But still, I thought, wait a minute, I don't want to pay full price, you know, for a leg that isn't
right
working properly.
Oh, sure.
So I just said, well, let me see what they'll do. So the guy called the manager over, and I showed her the problem. And she goes, well, would you take it for half price? I mean, I thought she was going to say, well, you know, we'll give it to you for like 10% off.
Yeah, right.
Or, you know, because it was obviously not that hard to fix it, like with crazy glue or whatever. And I'm like, okay. But I'm secretly thinking, like, wow, that was a big reduction. So that was a good little manifestation there.
And the last thing that was going on in your mind, which means that it was not going on at all, was your feeling that they were going to try to take advantage of you in some way, or that you were in a vulnerable or susceptible place.
Yes, let's just say, based on what you just said about Abraham, I was not in any resistant state about it at all.
Right, exactly.
Because I thought, well, she'll probably reduce it 10%, which is fine because I can fix it and it still looks great. But to do that, I was like, wow.
Isn't it wonderful when the law of attraction exceeds our expectations?
Yes, and I was like, you know, in my mind, like, yay, thank you, law of attraction. So that was the first kind of fun thing that happened.
That was a good one, yeah.
Yeah, and then last night, my parents wanted to go to the casino, which is about an hour away, and I enjoy going sometimes as well, so we went. And I was just kind of having fun, and then towards the end of the night, I realized, oh, I kind of had gone through the money that I brought. And I'm like, oh, I really want to make that back before I go. So I found this machine. It was a unicorn machine. And I just started focusing on what I want.
We should explain that, by the way, for people who have never been to a casino. What does that mean, a unicorn machine?
Okay, unicorn slot machine. So all the slot machines have different themes. Like, you know, there's, you know, Asian ones, Chinese ones, the unicorn one, the panda one. Like, you know, each one has its own
theme. Yeah, they're like
theme.
Star so Wars themes, and then there are like any kind of famous character in a cartoon or an adventure series.
Yeah,
singers.
Yeah, there's an Elton John one, a Willy Wonka one. They're all different. But so this one was unicorns. And I thought, unicorns are supposed to be good luck or whatever. So I sat down at the machine, and I really started focusing on what I wanted, and which was to get paid back for what I had spent. And I thought, let me get a big win on this machine. So I started playing it, and a few spins in, I got the bonus. And with these slot machines, typically you win the most if you get, like, the whole screen of something. You know, like, every column has the same picture or whatever it is.
The classic example being the three cherries, right?
Or whatever it is, yeah. So this machine had like five columns, and I just kept thinking, I really want the whole screen unicorns.
Okay. Whole screen.
Give me the whole screen unicorns. I really want the whole screen. And that's all I was kind of thinking. And the bonus gave me 10 spins. And at the sixth spin, I got the whole screen of unicorns, entire screen.
Very nice.
And I was like, oh, my God. It worked. I was, like, super focused on what I wanted and feeling excited about it. And I got the whole screen's unicorn, and it paid, like, $420.
Wow.
Which was more than I had even spent that night. And it was just like, yay. But I thought, you know, for whatever reason, in that moment, I just started focusing on that.
Yeah.
Whereas the rest of the night, I was just kind of having fun, not really caring so much. Which, when I think back, I'm like, why didn't I do that at every machine?
Yeah.
But in that moment, I thought to do it and got really good results.
Now, this is the second slot machine story you've told us in as many weeks, I believe. And
yes.
I do want to caution our listeners. We're not urging you to go out and try to apply the law of attraction in your local casino. Because the fact of the matter is, most people are really bad at doing it. So we don't want to set you up and think that, you know, oh, I'm going to go out and make myself $1 million, and then you've spent all your money, and you say, what happened? This requires a lot of...
David got the whole screen.
Yeah,
what
right.
about me?
This is something that requires a lot of personal development before you can finally do it. So don't try it, folks. Don't try this at home, as they say.
But if you just happen to be going to a casino anyway, try focusing on what you want and see what happens.
Or if it's not a casino, it doesn't have to be a casino that you try this on. In other words, you don't have to risk money in order to practice this.
That is true. But of course.
Yes.
Yeah. I just happened to be there, and I applied what I know, and I just thought, let me just see.
In fact, it's actually probably better to apply it in just the normal everyday life, I think.
Yes. I just happened to have this experience last night.
Right.
So I just wanted to share it.
But that's pretty wild, though, that you've done that 2 weeks in a row. I have to say, that's very impressive.
Yeah, my favorite one, though, was, which I think I did tell you, was where I was at some slot machine, and it said, win up to 100 free spins. You know, and I thought, I'd like 100 free spins, which I thought was interesting because I figured, wow, I bet most people when they see that probably think like, yeah, right, like I'm really going to get 100 free spins. And I thought, I'd really like that. And I didn't get it on that machine, but the very next machine I was playing, and I got 100 free spins. And I thought that was very interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is very interesting. And the fact that you are able to focus on and get what you want has a couple of messages to it, doesn't it? First of all, that it works.
Yes.
But secondly, you also got what you focused on. I mean, if it were me, I wouldn't be focusing on 100 free spins. I'd just be focusing on a positive payback. I don't care how many. I mean, do it in one spin. That's fine by me, you know.
Yeah. And I find it interesting that, you know, a lot of times with things we want to manifest, it doesn't happen instantly like that.
No.
There's usually some kind of delay, and you have to just keep trusting that it is going to manifest. But sometimes I have experience where it's kind of instant.
Well, that's an interesting topic by itself, and we should probably do a whole show on it at some point. But the question of why is there a delay?
Yeah.
Why do you think there is a delay?
Well, I think certain things we have more resistance. There's that word again.
Yep.
Resistance about than others. And I think sometimes in the moment you can be very low resistant about whatever it is you want, and it can happen. And then other times, maybe something seems bigger or something, so you have a little bit more resistance about it actually happening.
Or you could have a lot more resistance if you have some deep-seated doubts about it, and you're trying really hard, but there's that real strong doubt that's in there.
Yeah, yeah. And all I can say from my experience is that, like, when the times when I've can really feel I'm in a very non-resistant state, you just really do feel kind of lighter, and you don't feel any weighted downness about anything. Like, that's how the best way I can explain it. When I'm in a very non-resistant state about something I want, it really just does feel good and light.
Yes.
And
yeah,
it's an interesting thing.
It's a feeling of everything's okay.
Yes.
Everything's fine.
Yes.
You know, there's nothing to worry about, and everything that I'm looking at and thinking about and seeing and feeling and hearing and so forth is good.
Exactly.
In fact, as my wife likes to jokingly say sometimes, but.
Oh, God.
Which kind of takes us into what we're talking about this week, actually.
Yes.
Because we're up to chapter 6. Of Ask and It Is Given by Abraham Hicks. This chapter is subtitled The Law of Attraction, the Most Powerful Law in the Universe. And you've done a very nice job, David, the last couple of weeks of proving just how powerful it is by doing what many people would consider to be impossible. And what some people would probably say was, oh, he was just lucky. But but nevertheless, it's very powerful. And so let's read the first few paragraphs here. It says, every thought vibrates. Every thought radiates a signal, and every thought attracts a matching signal back. We call that process the law of attraction. We should probably stop on that paragraph, because that's an interesting one. And every thought attracts a matching signal back.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's kind of quantum physics. Like, what you put out, you get back. What you put out, you get back.
Yeah, I have to admit, that's where the quantum physics analogy starts to fall apart for me, because when you look at what quantum physics actually says, it doesn't actually say that. But
oh, that's what I always understood it to mean. But what is your definition of it?
Well, quantum physics is based on what happens with the transmission of light, and light transmits in the form of photons under quantum theory, and as a result of that, that observation leads to a series of understandings about the nature of the building blocks of the universe, including the nature of atoms and molecules and so forth. And then there's a whole structure of stuff that goes along with that. I can't remember ever seeing anything in quantum mechanic discussions in a science book or something like that that talks about signals going out and signals going back. That's really that's more of a law of attraction community thing that they say, oh, well, that's quantum physics. Well, you know, come on, guys, let's not take it too far here. I mean, I'm not disagreeing. I'm simply saying that's not quantum physicists had in mind. They had something different in mind entirely.
Okay.
Just to be fair, you know, because let's be honest, not everybody buys into the law of attraction like we do. And they will eventually. The law is inexorable. But, you know, for the most part, we don't really have a majority of people who understand and buy into the theory yet, particularly among quantum physicists. So why are we going to rub their noses in this thing that they don't buy into yet? That doesn't make any sense to me, you know?
Yeah.
So anyway, moving on. Second paragraph. The law of attraction says that which is like unto itself is drawn. I always thought that was a really screwy definition. Because... Well, I guess it's sort of biblical in the way that it uses, you know, weird English and so forth.
Oh, the way, I know what you mean, yeah.
But, yeah. I mean, that which is like unto itself is drawn. Who the heck on the other side thought that one up? I mean, come on. You can do better than this. This is not plain English that anybody can understand. But when you look at the phrase, it actually is true. that which is like unto itself is drawn. In other words, whatever is like itself is what you draw to yourself. That's what the law of attraction says. I just quibble over the way they say it.
I always like the definition, like energy attracts like energy, which is kind of the same thing.
Yeah, that's a nice straightforward, that's something that the average person can identify with more easily. It doesn't necessarily mean they understand it, but they can at least identify with it. So continuing on, it says, and so you might see the powerful law of attraction as a sort of universal manager that sees to it that all thoughts that match one another line up. You understand this principle when you turn on your radio and deliberately tune your receiver to match a signal from a broadcasting tower. It's obvious that this was written before the internet. Because we don't do this very much anymore. But it says, you do not expect to hear music that is being broadcast on the radio frequency of 101 FM to be received on your tuner when it is set at 98.6 FM. You understand that radio vibrational frequencies must match, and the law of attraction agrees with you. So as your experience causes you to launch vibrational rockets of desire, now that's one that they use a lot, but that's the first time we've heard it in this book.
Yeah.
You must then find ways of holding yourself consistently in vibrational harmony with those desires in order to receive their manifestation.
Yeah.
So we have an analogy of a radio station broadcasting at one frequency and we're tuned into another frequency. And that explains why we're not receiving the broadcast.
Mm-hmm.
I'm so glad we don't have to get people listening to our podcast to get the frequency right. But it's a very valid point. If you're not on the right frequency, you're not going to get what you expect out of it. And the same thing is going to be true for the law of attraction. If you put out there bad feeling, you can't expect to get good feeling back. And if you put out there good feeling, you can't expect to get bad feeling back.
Yes.
Now, here's
what are you tuning into? Which is another way of what are you thinking about?
Yes. What are you thinking about? Now here's the rub of the whole thing. If you put out a vibration that is very specific, like, for instance, I want to get a $500 profit on paying the casino, like you were doing earlier, right? Okay. What if you don't get the $500 back? Does that mean you didn't get a vibrational match?
Yeah.
What do you think? Does that mean that you didn't get a vibrational match if you don't get that $500 back?
Yeah. You had too much resistance about it. You didn't really believe it.
What if you got something? What if instead of getting $500 back, you got a free stay in the hotel that was unexpected?
Oh, that would be great. Then I would still celebrate the closeness of the match. So you didn't get the $500, but you got a free room.
So it doesn't have to be the same frequency. There's actually a little fudge factor where the law of attraction is concerned.
Yeah. Well, I actually don't like putting amounts to things because I think you're setting yourself up for resistance. It's like last night when I said, oh, I want the whole screen unicorns, I had no resistance to that because I didn't know if it was going to pay what it was going to pay. That's just what I wanted. But I think if I had thought a dollar amount, I don't think anything would have happened because it's kind of like you set yourself up for resistance. Like,
and similarly,
$500.
If you had also had a little bit of doubt whether it could actually show you five unicorns during that one session, that would also have provided resistance.
Right.
So it's really any kind of vibrational resistance keeps you from getting the big result. And by the big result, I mean a mostly match to what it is that you have in mind. But
yeah, when you're truly a vibrational match to something you want, it has to come in somehow.
In some sense.
The
key point I wanted to make is that it doesn't necessarily come in exactly as you had in mind. And that's, I think, one of the reasons why you don't put a dollar amount to it, because you're placing too much of a limit there. When you
make it
more open-ended, when you make it more different possible ways for you to be happy with the result, it's going to be a lot easier for the universe to fulfill it quickly.
Even sometimes when I work with people and they want to attract a certain salary, I always recommend they say at least X amount. Like, don't just say, oh, I want to attract X amount, because then you're setting yourself up for, first of all, you're blocking yourself from making more. Maybe you would make more than that.
Mm. How do you get at whether or not someone is experiencing doubt, and how do you coach them to get around the doubt?
Well, I just teach them about resistance, and I teach them certain processes that help them practice thinking about it in a non-resistant way.
So you actually don't try to figure out whether they're feeling doubt. You leave that to them.
Yeah. Yeah, I just teach them how to not have, how to think about something they want in a very non-resistant or low-resistant way so they can allow it in.
Which means that whether or not they're picking up and benefiting from what you're telling them really depends on their own ability to detect whether or not they're experiencing doubt.
Right. And just by practicing what we talk about, they're going to spend more time thinking about it in a way where it's more likely to manifest than not.
Ah, okay. So the trick becomes focus on what you want, take your focus off what you don't want, and that way you don't have to worry about whether you're feeling doubt.
Yeah, because if you start getting caught up in that, then you're going to feel it. Then you're going to be in that vibration.
That's true, yeah. The moment you start focusing in any way on doubt, you start feeling doubt. Well, that's frustrating.
Listen, how come that? I'm like, well, that's not really going to serve you and take you closer to what you want if you really keep delving into why and how and why and how. You just want to focus on what you want.
Which kind of touches on what they're touching on in the next part of this chapter. The subhead for this section is called, To What Are You Giving Your Attention? And it says, whatever you are giving your attention to causes you to emit a vibration, and the vibrations that you offer equal your asking, which equals your point of attraction. If there is something you desire that you currently do not have, you need only put your attention upon it, and by the law of attraction, it will come to you. For as you think about this thing of experience that you desire, you offer a vibration, and then by law, that very thing or experience must come to you. However, if there is something that you desire that you currently do not have, and you put your attention upon your current state of not having it, then law of attraction will continue to match that not having it vibration, so you will continue to not have that which you desire. It is law.
Yes.
This is actually probably the crux of where people get confused and doubtful and you know, just distrusting in general of the law of attraction.
Yeah, because it's easy to see what is. And focus on what is.
And if what is includes not having, and all you're doing is focusing on what is, that's not a good place to come from.
That's right.
That's going to be a losing proposition, no matter how you slice it. So you can put out there that you want something different from what is, but if you keep focusing again after that on what is, you're basically working against yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. And sometimes people do get caught up because like, yeah, but I still have to deal with what is. Like, sometimes I work with someone who maybe they're running a business and they want to attract more business or more money for the business, and I start working with them and getting the focus on what they want, and they're like, yeah, but I still have to deal with what is. And I said, well, I'm not asking you not to deal with what is, but how about just start focusing more on what you want? Like, sometimes that tricks up people.
It does trip. I know it tripped me up early on. And even today, I know the difference now. I understand the difference. But it's amazing how often I find myself kind of by default just lazily slipping back into that what is situation and not taking my attention away from it.
That's right. Because it's so much easier to focus on what is because we can see what is.
We can see what is, and it requires no focusing. That's really what it is, you know. The fact that we don't have to focus on it means we don't have to put any effort out.
Right. And a lot of this goes back to what we talked about in previous episode about we're not seeing everything that's going on and lining up for us. And we kind of just have to trust that that's happening.
Which is a little bit of a challenge, particularly early on.
Yeah.
When you're first trying to do this, that can be a big challenge because you don't know when it's going to come. And as soon as you say that, what often comes into your head immediately following is, if it's going to come. And the moment you say that, you're done.
Yeah. And it's like, we always have to remember the quote, universe wants us to succeed, wants us to have what we want. And if that kind of, if you kind of remember that with while you're trying to manifest whatever, it kind of makes it easier.
I kind of wish that the book focused more on that than it does. It does mention it a few times. There's about a 10-minute, I don't know what to call it. I wouldn't want to call it a rant because that sounds negative. But a 10-minute soliloquy, shall we call it?
Yes.
That Esther Hicks did in one of her workshops, one of her Art of Allowing workshops, and it was recorded, and it has, of course, gained widespread distribution on the web, on YouTube particularly. Uh-huh. So, I mean, anything you want to find on Abraham Hicks and Abraham Hicks, you can find on YouTube pretty much.
Oh yeah.
But this particular one was about 10 minutes about what you should do and what you should say and what you should think about as you're getting ready to go to sleep so that you can have a great day when you wake up.
Mm-hmm.
And what it actually turns out to be is a series of positive observations about the nature of life and the mm-hmm. nature of the law of attraction. And in the course of listing all of these, they actually address many of these points that we're talking about here.
Mm-hmm.
But they do it in a positive way. So
yeah.
I mention that because, among other things, one of the positives they mention is that there is a cheering section on the other side that's cheering us on every step of the way.
Mm, yes, I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So like you were saying, you described it as the universe wanting us to succeed. The way
yes.
they describe it in those little positive cliche things that she went through, the universe is actually beings, both physical and non-physical beings. And the non-physical beings are like our cheering section, you know, constantly with us, pushing us, like, go, 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 go.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the kind of thing that
we can all remember
that.
That.
Yeah.
Yeah, if we can remember that just knowing that, and remembering that takes away a lot of the resistance.
It does. It makes us feel like we're not alone. Because that's probably the source of most of the fear and anxiety and anger that we feel as human beings. Fear of being alone in the greater scheme of things. And when you get
yeah.
that kind of reminder, it's like, oh yeah, we're not really alone. We're connected
no.
to everybody and everything. And that includes everybody who's non-physical.
Right. And it's just having the awareness to remember that when it would help the most.
It's also helpful to remember that there are a whole lot more non-physical folks than there are physical folks.
And they're all rooting for us to succeed.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you have trouble believing that all of them are rooting for us to succeed, then figure that most of them are rooting for you to succeed. Don't worry about the others.
Which why I think it's just easier to think, you know what, the universe wants me to succeed at whatever.
Yes.
And just knowing that just feels good.
It does feel good. It feels like it's not all on your shoulders, you know?
Exactly. I feel there's more going on than what we can do and see.
Now, continuing in the chapter, it says, next subhead, how can I know what I am attracting? Which is kind of what we've been dancing around here. It says, the key to bringing something into your experience that you desire is to achieve vibrational harmony with what you desire. And the easiest way for you to achieve vibrational harmony with it is to imagine having it, pretend that it is already in your experience, flow your thoughts toward the enjoyment of the experience, and as you practice those thoughts and begin to consistently offer that vibration, you will then be in the place of allowing that into your experience.
And again, you have to be, though, in a right way, though, to allow that, to feel that. Because sometimes when I work with people, they're so negative still about whatever that when they try to think about what they want, it actually, like, upsets them because they don't have it. It feels so far away. It feels so far away and so hard to happen.
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned that because the next paragraph says, now by paying attention to the way you feel, you can easily know if you are giving your attention to your desire or if you're giving it or if you're giving it to the absence of your desire.
Yes.
And that negative feeling
yes.
is the absence of the desire.
That's right. And sometimes people are just so rehearsed and have spent so much time thinking about how much they don't have whatever it is that in the beginning, just in the beginning when they start to refocus, it feels hard for them because they're like, they're just so caught up in not having it that it takes a little bit of time to even shift that into a better way.
I have a little personality quirk that I've done all of my life, and it's been not planned in any way. It's just that I've always done this. I doubt that most people who know me even know that I do it.
Mm-hmm.
But I have a tendency, whenever I've experienced something, particularly an interaction with another human being, after the interaction is done and I'm walking away or whatever, I tend to repeat what I said quietly to myself.
Oh, okay.
If I said to, you know, if you and I talked and I said, wow, it's such a sunny day today. Don't you think it's a sunny day? As I'm walking away, I'd say, you know, it's really such a sunny day. Don't you think it's a sunny day? Which is a really weird quirk to have. But I also realized that it's a quirk that can work either way, because there have been many times when that quirk has manifested where I have not manifested. That's the wrong word. Well, it does manifest, but that's not what I mean. Where the quirk has popped up. Let's put it that way.
Right.
And right. I realized after the fact that what had popped up was me repeating something that I really don't want to have in my life.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, that actually happens a lot. And I find that it happens most often when I've been in kind of a wrestling of ideas situation, a debate situation or something like that. And I'm basically replaying for myself, so did I phrase everything the way I wanted to and so forth. And in the course of doing that, I'm basically setting myself up. That's a rather dismaying thing to notice about yourself, you know?
So what are you doing to try to not do that?
Well, I have a choice. I can either try to stop the habit, which is awful hard to do. You can replace one habit with another habit, but just ending a habit is really, really hard to do. I would say borderline impossible.
Mm-hmm.
But I could try to come up with a new habit instead. I'm not sure what the new habit would be, but that would be possibly one approach. Or the other approach is to monitor what it is that I'm focusing on when I engage in that habit, and just make sure that any time I'm about to mirror, reflect something that I said that wasn't quite so positive, to stop and change the storyline. Change it to something positive.
What do I want? What do I want?
Yeah.
What do I want about whatever it is that you were going to think about?
And it's very often something that I didn't really think of it in terms of something that I wanted. I certainly wasn't phrasing it either to the other person or later to myself as something that I wanted. But nevertheless, there is desire associated with it. And it's the desire that I have to tap into and remind myself, okay, what is it that I really desire here?
Yeah.
And by focusing that way, now I can give myself the opportunity to change the dialogue. And that's what I've been practicing doing, changing. You know, if I'm going to have this habit of, you know, repeating the conversation after it happened, I might as well turn it into a better conversation the second time around.
and you're lucky that you realize you even do that.
Oh, yeah.
Not everybody would even have that awareness.
No, I certainly didn't. I wasn't aware of it for over 50 years. So.
I know, but that's what I'm saying. But at least you became aware of it.
I did become aware of it very recently, but I did. And I consider that to be a victory. So I reach around and I pat myself on the back and say, good job, Walt.
Absolutely, yes.
So continuing, it says, when your thoughts are a vibrational match to your desire, you feel good. Your emotional range would be from contentment to expectation to eagerness to joy. But if you're giving your attention to the lack or absence of your desire, your emotions would range from feelings of pessimism to worry to discouragement to anger to insecurity to depression. I'm just reading that list. Makes me feel down. And so as you become consciously aware of your emotions, which is what I've been talking about learning to do for myself here, you will always know how you are doing with the allowing part of your creative process. And you will never again misunderstand why things are turning out the way they are. Your emotions provide a wonderful guidance system for you, and if you will pay attention to them, you will be able to guide yourself to anything that you desire. And that is the cool thing about studying all this stuff and paying attention to all this stuff. You do start to become more aware over time.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
I mean, it's almost without planning. You don't really intend necessarily to do it. I mean, on one level you do, but it happens in a way and to a degree that far exceeds anything I originally hoped for.
Yeah.
Is that true for you too?
Yeah. I mean, it's a great awareness to be that aware, and then once you are, then you can adjust your thoughts and such to more of what you want.
But I guess what I'm asking is, did you find that it came easier than you thought when you started to do that the first time?
Yeah. It's kind of like once you know some of the basics about law of attraction and you really start becoming aware of your thoughts, then it kind of makes it easier to put a lot of this into place.
Yes.
To practice. Yeah.
Yeah. It kind of feeds itself. That's actually part of the law of attraction mechanism, because by focusing on that side of things, you're actually focusing on the feel-good side.
That's right. And that's interesting, because a lot of times when I work with somebody and I ask them to start focusing on what they want about something, at first they have a little trouble. And then once a few thoughts come in about what they want, about whatever we're talking about, then before you know it, they're like, oh, yeah, that's right, and I want it to be like this, and oh, and also like this. So that like thought thing really is true.
Yeah, when you start from that negative place where you're really down and depressed and angry,
yes,
and resistant and all that kind of stuff, it can almost seem impossible that you can feel good.
Yeah, that's right.
It does. I mean,
that's right.
It's almost like a revelation the first time that it occurs to you that, oh, yeah, there is such a thing as feeling good.
Mm-hmm.
Because you've been out of it for so long that it's almost like you blanked your mind to it.
Right, and focusing on what you don't want and the pain or misery or whatever it is for so long that when you start to try to think about something more positive, it takes a little bit of time to, like, get to that place where the other positive thoughts start coming in.
I was having a conversation.
They do.
Oh, they do.
Do.
Oh, they definitely do. Yeah, you just have to be willing to kind of stick to the plan. Even though, you know, 9 times out of 10 you're failing, at least you're getting it right 1 time out of 10, and then over time, 2 times out of 10,
which is better than what you were doing,
which was 0 out of 10.
That's right.
About 2 months ago, I mentioned somebody I know who was a neighbor who was very negative. Do you remember me telling you about him?
I think so. Yeah.
Interestingly enough, we were having a conversation recently, and he asked about this podcast that I do. He said, what's it about? I said, oh, it's about the law of attraction. And he instantly lit up and was interested to hear more, so I sent him a link to it. And talk about law of attraction, David. You know what the first episode he randomly picked was? The one where I mentioned him.
Oh, how funny.
And, of course, a shout-out to him, you know, because he's probably listening to this one, too. But it's great because he did come from a really, really negative place. And he's got, let me be perfectly honest, he's got a lot of challenges in his life. Really, really big challenges, which, you know, I can honestly say to a large extent, and I think he'd agree with this, he's brought into his life himself.
He does
focus on all the things that happened to him. So in some ways, he kind of doesn't buy into it. But, you know, there's a certain part of him that agrees, yeah, I mean, some of this is my fault. I understand that.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
And that combined with, I've been really hitting him with as many positives as I can think of to do, you know, in the course of normal conversation. And as a result, he's more open to it now than he was. So this all leads up to a conversation I had with him a couple days ago in which I asked him, so how would you say your life is going right now? Do you feel like you're getting back on track?
Mm-hmm.
And his answer was, well, sometimes yes and sometimes no. Which doesn't sound
That's
all that
better.
Great. It was
That's
much
better.
Better.
Yeah.
It's a big improvement, actually.
Yes.
So it's kind of hard sometimes to see the improvement yourself, but I could see it, and you could hear it instantly. I mean, as soon as I just said it, you just lashed right onto it.
Yeah, I hope he realizes that even a little bit is still good.
Because what happens is, the more that you do even a little bit, the more it fuels more of it.
That's right.
It's a self-fueling thing. That's part of what the law of attraction does for us. The law of attraction basically gives us a way back to where we want to be.
That's right. Because it feels, once you start feeling really good, that feels more natural than
the
opposite.
Now, of course, his reaction is going to be, well, it's not just that I want to feel a certain way. I want my experience to be a certain way. I want my life experience to be better.
But it's connected, though.
And when you're in a resistant state, and he is, we all are to some extent, but he's in a fairly resistant state right now. So when you're like that, it's going to take time because you're so resistant. The trick, therefore, is to just use this time as a way to look for ways to practice focusing on the positive feeling, because the more that you do that, the more you speed things up.
Yes, for sure.
Which is a hard concept. Sure. That's a hard concept, David.
Yeah.
I mean, it's easy. It's very simple to say. It's very simple to explain. But when you're faced with it in the midst of chaos and crisis, that's a hard concept.
Yeah, but he must feel that it feels better to think to focus on what he wants, and even though he may not be doing it a lot, he must feel it, though, when he does.
Oh, yeah, he must. I mean, he does give me, you know, hints and signals that, there is at least some times when he's feeling better.
Good. Yes.
In fact, I was able to share with him something that helped lighten the load a little bit. There was a guy who wrote some rather funny songs back in the 1960s. His name was Tom Lehrer. He was actually a professor at MIT and Harvard and so forth. But he used to write these little ditties on the piano and you know, with lyrics and sing them for his friends and so forth. And they were so good, he ended up going on tour.
Oh, wow. That's fantastic.
You might even know one or two of them. Do you remember a song called Pollution?
No, I mean, maybe if I heard it, but so, not just off.
Many kids have sung it in school.
And how does it go?
Pollution, da da. I can't remember the lyrics of it, but
you that know, was your chance to sing for the world.
Yeah, unfortunately, my chance of stardom passed a long time ago. But the point is that he wrote these songs that were really kind of funny. One of them was about what they called the new math, and I don't know if okay. you remember. Do you remember new math at all? That may have been before your time. I'm not sure.
I don't remember that. No.
New math was put out in the late 50s and early 60s as a new way to teach mathematics. Actually, not so much mathematics as arithmetic, teaching kids right. how to learn arithmetic. And so he wrote this song as a way to kind of satirize and make fun of the new math. There was a guy who took this song and illustrated it, you know, like line drawing animated illustrations. And so this video is available online. You can find it. The songwriter's name is Tom Lehrer, L-E-H-R-E-R. And if you look up Tom Lehrer New Math, this will pop up if you do that search in YouTube. It's great. You got to watch it. But the reason it came up in conversation with my friend is that we both discovered that we had scored very high in the math score in the SATs. And so I thought, well, he's going to love this. So I sent it to him. And he did love it. He up until that point had not done a whole lot of smiling and laughing, and he texted me back. He was laughing. He was enjoying it. He was having fun. Good. He was listening to the other guy's videos and so forth and the other guy's songs, and it was picking him up, you know? So there's a way I was able to help give him something to feel good about, and now he's, like, looking forward to it. In fact, it was shortly after that he asked about the podcast.
Oh, wow. Fantastic.
Yeah. So it's probably hard for him to see the progress, but that's how we see the progress, because we see him doing things that he wasn't doing before and finding ways to feel good.
And music, like fun, up-tempo music, can definitely raise you vibrationally. I mean, sometimes, especially first thing in the morning after I just wake up and I just want to feel more awake and high vibration, I will throw on like an EDM station, like electronic dance music. And I just start dancing around and having fun, and it can definitely raise you vibrationally.
It does. By the way, you asked about the lyrics to Pollution. I couldn't remember them off the top of my head. I just remembered one little piece of it, so I'll give you that one little piece.
Okay.
Now, this was back when water pollution and air pollution were much more of a big problem here in the U.S. You know,
right.
The 1970s
right.
was really pretty bad from that perspective. And that's what he was singing about. And he says, if you visit American City, you will find it very pretty. Just two things you should not do when there. Don't breathe the water. Don't drink the water, and don't breathe the air.
Oh my goodness! Well, I guess at the time he was right.
He was right at the time, and it was fun. I mean, he wrote these songs that, I mean, if anybody needs a lift, go listen to Tom Lehrer, because it's light humor. And most of the stuff you wrote about is long since passed, so it's easy to laugh at it, too. But that's what's so good about, you know, anything that you find enjoyable or humorous in particular can just really just take the sting out of anything negative going on in your life.
Yeah, and you know, it also affects our health. Like when we're
feeling
light about things and feeling good and laughing, and that affects our health in a positive way.
Oh, yeah. In fact, two co-hosts back, before you, of course, was Joel Elston, and before Joel was my sister-in-law, Iona. She did probably, I don't know, 6, 7, 8 months worth of shows with me.
Right.
And she is a doctoral candidate. The specialty keeps shifting a little bit, but generally it's related to neurobiology and human biology and so on and so forth, but particularly on the neural side. And she was telling me one time how researchers have actually gotten to the point now where they can trace in the human body from the point where you experience and feel laughter and positive frame of mind, they can trace it all the way down to where that kicks off a series of steps that leads to healing going on in a particular part of the body that has a disease or cancer or some kind of, you know, problem like that. There are direct connections, and they can trace the whole route of it. So this isn't just some, you know, woo-woo thing saying that when you when you focus on good stuff, you actually heal yourself. This is science. Science has now documented this is true.
I mean, many years ago, I went to this wonderful place called the Optimum Health Institute of San Diego. And it's one of these places you go to, like, you know, detox your body. Some people go for health reasons. Some people, like me, just go for, like, the preventative measures, kind of.
Sure.
And every morning, everyone who's there, you get up very early, and they do, like, a little bit of easy exercising. But then part of the morning routine is laughter. And the person who's instructing it says, okay, now everyone just laugh.
Mm.
And, like, the first day I experienced that, I was like, what? And then, like, you know, she would start laughing, and then someone else would start laughing. And before we know, everybody was laughing.
Because fortunately, laughter is very contagious.
Yeah, well, that's what starts happening. Before you know it, you're, like, cracking up for a few minutes. And every morning, that was part of the routine, because it's all connected to how you feel and your health. And it was just so interesting to learn that, you know.
It's amazing how powerful laughter is.
Probably and laughter is a high vibration.
It is. It's very vibration. Probably the earliest example of it that I knew about was from the 1950s. And, of course, his name's Norman Cousins. That's his name. He's the one who got cancer and beat cancer by watching Marx Brothers and Charlie Chaplin and other funny movies from the time. And
that's right.
What we now know is the reason it worked is because he laughed. That's an interesting thing. You can watch something that's funny, and if you aren't laughing, it won't help you. You have to laugh at it.
You have to connect. Yeah, you have to connect with that.
Yeah. Yeah. If you aren't engaged in it, it's not going to help. You can watch and say, you know, observe, you know, from an objective point of view, yes, that's funny. It won't do a thing for you. You have to be involved.
Yes, I mean, one time I had a client, and I use a 1 to 10 vibrational scale with my clients. And like, if someone's at a 1, like they're really low, depressed, and someone who's at a 10 would be just like, "Woo, I just feel so happy and good right now." And she had never experienced a 10. And during one of our calls, we started talking about something, and it led to laughter. And the more she laughed, the more I laughed, and the more I laughed, the more she laughed.
Yeah, those are always fun.
We were laughing so hard, and it was so funny. She was like, "Oh my God, I think I'm at a 10. I'm at a 10. And I'm like, "Well, that's what it took. Wonderful. I mean, it was just another example of how important that is, to just laughter. And so, I don't know. I think that would be a fun thing, like, to practice every morning, like, kind of making yourself laugh to start the day and raise yourself that way vibrationally.
Well, if you think about it, that's one of the things that a comedian tries to do. They want to get you laughing, because then it makes it easier to get the second and the third and the fourth laugh out of you.
Yes. I always think it's funny with comedians, too, because the audience goes to laugh. So I almost feel like they're more susceptible to laughing.
Yes.
Because they want to. They want to have fun. And they want, even if the jokes aren't that funny, they want to laugh.
Which is one of the reasons I probably don't enjoy watching many comedy shows and comedy things on, you know, recorded stand-up routines and so forth. Because most often, I'm not in that mind space when I see them. And so I hear the routine and I say, well, that's not funny.
Oh, okay. Well, I think you would be a good candidate then to force yourself to laugh every morning.
Well, don't get me wrong. I actually enjoy laughing. In fact, I try to engage in some sort of joke telling or whatever as part of my daily conversations with people.
Good.
You know, I just make it part of the way like I take phone calls for my wife's gardening business, you know, so I'm often the one who answers the phone on somebody who's calling for the first time. And one of the things that I'll try to do, often subconsciously now, because it's just part of my pattern now, so to speak, is I'll try to find something to identify with the other person and then play it up, you know. So they talk about how, you know, they're not able to do their own gardening anymore. They used to do it for years. They loved it, but they're just not able to do it. And I'll commiserate with that. And I'll say, yeah, we have a lot of customers like that. They love it being able to have the gardens grow and do what a garden should do without having to do the work themselves. And they say, yeah, oh, yeah, that's what I'm looking for. And, of course, like you just laughed right now, that's what it leads to really fast. You know?
Yes, that's right.
So there are lots of ways to get to that laughter position. You don't have to be listening to a comedian.
No. I, like at this retreat, there was nothing. It's just people just started laughing randomly, and that just kind of triggered everyone else to start laughing. Mm-hmm.
Now, if I do want to get myself to laugh by listening to a comedian, there is one comedian who, not all the time, but often, would get me to laugh, and that was Robin Williams.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he was a star.
He was just unbelievable. And if I have one go-to recording of his, it's when he appeared on the Bravo TV show called Inside the Actor's Studio. The first roughly 12 to 15 minutes of that show, he is on. He is absolutely on. And he's clean, which is, I don't really go for the blue stuff very much. But but he's really clean in this routine. And just, I mean, it's one of those deals where the one laugh leads to the next laugh, which leads to the next laugh. In fact, there's one of the students in the audience. I don't know if you're familiar with the show, but
I have watched it, yeah.
You have? Okay. Well, for those who don't know it, this show is filmed at the New School in New York City. And the New School is a theater school. In other words, it's a school for people who want to learn to be actors and producers and directors and all the other stuff that goes on to, you know, being in showbiz. So all the people in the audience are students at the school or alumni of the school or you know, patrons or whatever. And there was this one student, a young woman, who had the best laugh. In fact, Robin noticed her and remarked on how good her laugh was. But she was so susceptible that evening when he was recording. Within like a minute or two, she was just practically rolling on the floor. And everything that he said after that, she was just laughing and laughing and laughing. And
every comedian needs that personally.
Yeah. That's what they crave. And he turned to her at one point and he said, "Are you okay?"
That's funny. Yeah.
But, oh, he was off of it. So that's what I listened to. I watched that video. I've got a copy of it. In fact, I actually ordered a DVD of it.
I have a video like that, too, but mine is if you go on YouTube and you search Saturday Night Live bloopers, and what it does is so there's so many times where the skit is so funny that the actors just start laughing in the middle of the skit.
Yeah.
And that just cracks me up so much. It's so funny to watch that.
That reminds me of the old Carol Burnett TV show.
Yes.
Where Tim Conway would try to get Harvey Korman to laugh.
Oh, my God. Yes, I think those are hysterical, too. Yes.
And poor Harvey, he'd be sitting there, and he's trying so hard not to laugh because he's trying to stay in character. And Tim is just mercilessly doing everything he can to get Harvey to laugh.
And it usually worked.
It usually worked because Tim was he's a very funny man. But
oh, my goodness. I can't believe we're almost at the hour.
I know. Isn't that something? Well, hey, there's an example of how laughter just makes time go by.
That's right.
So not only does it help you manifest what you want in your life, it feels good, and the time goes by, and you're like, whoa, that was quick.
That's right.
Well, we do have about a minute left, so let's do our usual finishing routine. First of all, how can people reach you if they want to have a little laughter therapy and become life coached?
Yes, if you want some amazing law of attraction life coaching, you can go to my website, lifecoachdavid.com, and it's all phone coaching, so it doesn't matter where you live. And there, you'll see there's a way to contact me, or there's even an online calendar where you could book your first free session. And don't hesitate to do it, because you'll really like it, and it's free.
Have you ever done laughter therapy with a client?
No, but like I said, that one client, we just got ourselves into a laughing fit, and she
So you
got to
make this a regular thing, you know, so you can sell it, like, you know, laugh every morning with David, you know?
I'm open to that.
Okay, well, there you go. And by the way, you can also subscribe to our podcast at loatoday.net, as well as listen to us here on PRN, but we do urge you to subscribe, and David, our subscriptions are increasing, so that's good news, too.
Yay! Very good.
Been a pleasure as usual.
Yep, same here. Enjoyed it.
We'll see you all next time here on LOA Today. Goodbye, everyone.